I think that consultancies that help the world to move towards a direction that is less purely capitalism motivated are going to increasingly succeed. I mean, people want to feel like they're helping fix the world's problems, not just helping make businesses make more money.
Welcome to Secrets of the City, the show where we uncover the stories behind the people who work in the highly lucrative yet enigmatic jobs of the City of London. I'm your host, Ayush Santalia, and today we speak to Kate McGarahan. Kate is currently a senior consultant at OC&C Strategy Consultants in London, and she got there through what she describes as a journey of continuous steps outside her comfort zone. She's originally from St. Louis, Missouri, and studied French and marketing at Northwestern University before joining a marketing agency called FCB Chicago, where she worked for 5 years.
We did Super Bowl ads, we did, you know, print billboards, full integrated campaigns. I worked on retail strategy. So a lot of my brands were, they're big brands that you've heard of, like Oreo cookies and Heinz ketchup and Coca-Cola. But we did some of the stuff that appeared more in stores and was about the shopper journey and about how people navigate the retail environment and make buying decisions. I changed roles in advertising. I worked 5 years in advertising, but I switched roles halfway through. So I went from an account executive, which is kind of more project management and client service, into a role called strategic planning, which is much more about the consumer insight that drives the campaign and that is used to really inspire the creatives to create the idea. And that was super fun, but advertising is also really, really fast paced and super competitive. Increasingly, it's a low margin industry. And I was spending 25% of my time working on pitch work, which is on top of your day job, working 70 hours a week and giving up most weekends to work on pitches, which was not sustainable. And I couldn't really see that going away given the way the industry was going. So I decided that I was ready to finally use my French degree and break out of America.
From there, Kate decided to do an MBA in INSEAD in France. Doing an MBA is a pretty common option in America, but doing an MBA overseas is significantly less common. After all, most of the leading MBA schools are based in the US. The Harvard MBA is probably one of the most famous business degrees out there.
The INSEAD MBA is well known in Europe, but most Americans haven't heard of INSEAD. And that was kind of fine with me because I was ready to have a new adventure. So I did like that it was a one-year program and I wasn't going to have to take 2 years out of my career and 2 years out of, without pay, basically, at that point. I studied mostly on the Fontainebleau campus of INSEAD. Got to spend a couple months in Singapore, which was cool too. And I was intending to get a job in marketing or strategy when I graduated. Consulting is a common exit route for MBA students just because it comes with usually a sponsored visa and a decently high paycheck, which enables us to pay back our loans, which are significant in my case. So I wasn't sure I wanted to do consulting. I was open to it. Funnily enough, I was actually dating a consultant long term, and he always said I would hate consulting and that I was, you know, a terrible fit for the industry. So I didn't really consider it. Broke up with him and actually my friends. Well, I had friends who were in consulting, a different kind of consulting than the consulting he was in. And they were like, Kate, you'd be great at this. I mean, you have strategy experience. You're really good with people. You're good at project management. Why would you rule it out?
Kate listened to her friends' advice and started to apply to consultancies all over the UK. She eventually picked OC&C Strategy Consultants, a global consultancy that has a particularly strong reputation in retail, leisure, and consumer goods, industries that resonated quite strongly with Kate.
And OC&C was a really good fit because essentially having done retail strategy and consumer goods strategy in an agency, moving over to the management consulting side, it's the same client base. It's just a little bit more early in the process when it comes to insight. Instead of like being the person who gets told we're launching this new product, make us a great ad campaign for it. And sometimes I'd get briefs for advertising and I'd just be like, well, you shouldn't have made this product. There's nothing I can do for you that will sell this because it is a bad product. It's exciting to now be way farther upstream and be the person giving the strategic advice on which markets to enter, kind of which you know, where are product innovation opportunities, etc. So OC&C was a really good fit for my background, but it was also kind of a step into consulting, which I hadn't anticipated.
I want to talk to you a little bit more about your job in Chicago. You worked in marketing there for 5 years. You covered many of the same industries that you do now at OC&C. But what would you say the main differences between working at a marketing agency and working in consulting?
Well, my agency was about 850 people. We had 5 floors and an in-house coffee bar, an in-house movie theater, production studio, audio booths. And it was very much a creative environment. There was always stuff hanging up on the walls everywhere and people writing on whiteboards and brainstorms. And all the designers are like covered in tattoos and sitting at Apples. Working in consulting, it's strange. Working in consulting certainly feels a bit more subdued and quiet. The creativity is happening only in people's minds. It's a little bit less out in the open. But the strange thing is the fast-paced and high-energy environment and being around cool people that I genuinely find interesting and that I want to talk to and get to know is exactly the same. The one thing that I would say, which is different in my agency also, is that you get a bit more of a broad age spectrum in advertising, strangely enough, because people decide to become creatives at, you know, you can become a creative when you're 21, or you can become a writer. You have a lot of career switchers who decide they want to get into a more creative field, and they'd be writers who are like 40. But I worked on a daily basis with people in a wider age range, whereas at OC&C, and I think this is pretty typical of most consulting firms, you start young and you kind of grow up in the career. And so there's a lot of young people in a consulting firm. You have your peer group, and your teams are pretty young in age, with the exception of the partners who are more senior and older, but you also have less contact with them, I think, than I did with the account leaders. So those are some of the main differences.
The other question I had on that was, obviously that job was in Chicago in the US, and now you work in London. Are there any differences you found between working in the UK versus America?
Yeah, loads. So many. So great in London. Well, one of the things you should know about America is the closer to the middle you are, the less diverse the country is. So there's racial diversity, but I worked with mostly other Americans, people who'd grown up probably in the Midwest, somewhere nearby, and who'd had a pretty similar background and education. Working in London, I work with way more international people from all over the world. I mean, my pod at OC&C, you have an American, a Dane, a Czech person, and now an Aussie and 2 Brits. And I think that's like a broader commentary on living in London too versus Chicago. Culturally also, I think the British office culture is very different. The style of dressing is much more based in navy tones, and there's a lot less flamboyance. There's, I think, the British personality of a bit of kind of stiff upper lip and not necessarily communicating openly what you're thinking inwardly. It pervades office culture, even in London. Sometimes I feel like I'm the most blunt person in the room, and I like to play that role some, I think, actually. It's like I can be a little bit of a big fish in a small pond at OC&C, being like the loud American who tells it like it is, whereas in Chicago everyone was the loud American who tells it like it is, and we're all just kind of talking over each other.
Yeah. I know after that you changed tracks and went on to do your MBA in Seattle in France. What was the motivation for you behind that sort of sudden change in direction?
Genuinely, the reason why I wanted to get an MBA was because I wanted to have an adventure. I wanted to go to INSEAD. I didn't just want an MBA. I didn't apply to the school in Chicago. I didn't apply to the schools in New York. I was kind of like, this is my chance to get out of America and to... I wanted an international MBA because I wanted an international career. And I wanted to meet people from all over the world, because whenever I've had the chance to do that, I really enjoyed it. I always felt a bit trapped in the Midwest, surrounded by white middle-class people who were exactly like me, who didn't necessarily share my curiosity and sense of adventure. It was almost like an escape. That said, getting an MBA is useful from a career perspective in a number of ways. I had never taken a single finance course. It was important that I learn what an NPV is. So that was good. It also enabled me to take some classes in industries that I was like considering dipping my toe in. So for example, I mean, luxury goods are really big in France. I'd worked in consumer goods, but never in luxury and marketing. I was kind of like, oh, wouldn't it be cool to work in fashion or to work in luxury goods? So it was kind of good for process of elimination. Like I got to dabble in a very risk-free way in some industries. And then, like, full disclosure, the opportunities are massive. So many companies come to campus looking to hire. And you spend all of this time investing in writing a good resume, learning how to tell your story well. You have the time to practice because you're not working. And you can really reflect on your choices and why you've done what you've done and what you want to do next. And just having that time out, especially in your late 20s when you're kind of at a, I think most people in that kind of, they get to a point where they're just like, oh God, life is really starting and happening. And I've kind of just gone with the flow, and now I've ended up here, and how did I get here, and do I really want to be here, or do I want to be somewhere else? So it was a good time to like take stock and think about it and make conscious choices.
Yeah, I definitely think that time is valuable and pretty difficult to find actually once you start in the working world. If we shift tracks a little bit now, I want to talk to you a bit more about your job at OC&C. You're a senior consultant, which is a level up from the most kind of junior level at the firm. How would you describe your job and the role it plays in the wider organization?
Well, I'm coming off of a 4-month strategy project. So this is probably going to be that's what's freshest in my mind. I think my job is to facilitate the strategy development process with across, you know, the key stakeholders of a major business, which is our client, and across the analytical resources and collective intelligence of OC&C. And that is, I'm describing a senior consultant role, which in some cases looks like a managerial role because you're running some of the process of a project and doing the work planning, deciding when meetings are going to be, facilitating interactions with clients, but you're also getting the data, organizing the data into work streams, setting tasks for analysts to essentially, these are the questions you go answer, these are the questions you go answer. We put all these answers together and it will give us a larger answer as to, you know, what the business is good at, what the business is bad at, what they should do more of and less of. And then it's a kind of distillation process to get that from a paragraph to a sentence and from a sentence to 4 words. But I've spent a lot of time working with clients in particular on this project. And also I usually manage between 2 and 4 people because I'll have like a senior associate consultant working for me and then they're managing someone else. So it's also like definitely people management and leading teams, which I enjoy because I'm a people person.
You obviously had a lot of experience before you started working in consulting. You'd worked in marketing, you'd done an MBA. Was there anything about the job that actually you weren't expecting before you started doing it?
The biggest surprise to me was how much I was expected to micromanage people when I got into this job and how I was expected to be able to tell my ACs exactly what they should be doing and set them like, just basically like give them detailed instructions. Because I didn't know what the detailed instructions were going to be. I didn't know how to do their job. I assumed they knew how to do their job better than I did. And I was asking them what they thought. As a leader, that's just not my leadership style. I am a much more big picture leader, and I prefer to let people decide exactly how they do their job on their own. It just took time for me to actually learn what the steps are. And I can now be prescriptive when I need to be. But I didn't expect that I would have to be that way. And I think that that's something that it makes consulting entering at the middle quite difficult for someone who comes in at a consultant level and has not been an associate and doesn't know the day-to-day of how you do the job. And so it takes cycling through a lot of different project types and roles to figure out, actually, okay, these are all the different ways you do the job. I like to say that coming in as an experienced hire to a consulting firm, you're expected to learn 3 jobs before you get promoted. You have to learn what associates do and how to do it so that you can tell them how to do their jobs. You have to learn what a consultant does and do your job. And then you have to prove that you can do a manager's job and essentially be a functioning manager for 6 months to a year before they'll actually give you the managerial role. So you basically move three roles in one by the time you get your first public validation that you have done a good job and something happens.
Yeah, I never realized that actually. How have you found your time in consulting so far? Have you enjoyed it? Has it been challenging?
It's had its moments. I definitely have enjoyed lots of it. There's definitely been moments where I was also just like, why am I putting myself through this? Because I never saw myself becoming a partner. I don't see myself becoming a partner. While I see massive amounts of value in giving a third party outsider perspective, fundamentally, I think consultants are still worse at running businesses than good business leaders because they have to be jacks of all trades and they have to take an 80-20 view. And I think if I really want to make something in my career, which I do because I have a creative urge, if I want to build a thing, it's not going to come in consulting. Consulting's not about making things. It's about advising and changing existing things. And I want to make a thing. So I don't think that I'll be able to satisfy that urge in consulting unless I make my own consultancy, essentially. The second point is it's still client service, and client service sucks. Client service fundamentally is a job where you have to make sacrifices, your family has to make sacrifices, you are not the one calling the shots, the customer is. And I've been in client service my whole life. I mean, advertising is client service too, law is client service. Most city jobs are actually client service. And the thing with client service is, you can do it right and you can set good boundaries. The problem is other people don't. And I just think, especially for people kind of who want to have more work-life balance or have a family or not work 5 days a week, like it becomes increasingly less feasible in a client service model. So that's more of a kind of a life choice thing.
You kind of alluded to something that I want to talk to you a bit more about. You said that you want to build a thing at some point. What exactly is that? What do you foresee that thing actually being?
I have no idea.
Okay, fair enough.
I don't know what it looks like.
Yeah.
But
is it like a startup though, or is it more you want to go into industry, or is it?
I don't have what it takes to be an entrepreneur. I know that much. Entrepreneurs are a crazy breed of people, and I am not that breed. I definitely admire entrepreneurs. I could potentially be very excited about an idea that an entrepreneur had and get in very early on something and dedicate a lot of my talent to it. I could see myself doing that, but I don't think I could be the one with the idea. What I mean by make a thing is I want to be able to have put something in the world and say, I did that, and that exists because of me. Like, I'll never forget the first time I ever saw a piece of advertising that I had made in the real world. I was home for the weekend visiting my parents in St. Louis, and I opened up the fridge, and inside the fridge was a gallon of milk. And on the gallon of milk, there was a sticker advertising Oreo cookies, because Oreo cookies go with milk. And I had run the project to design and produce that sticker 3 months earlier at my agency. I had approved the proofs. I had signed them in the design studio. I had gone to the vendor. The vendor had printed like 5 million stickers, put them on the milk, and somehow that milk had ended up in my mother's fridge. And I lost my shit. I was so excited. I poured out the milk and cut the sticker off so I could save it forever. It was just so cool to have that feeling of like, I did that. That's there. And consulting is super abstract. You can look at a company's financial statements and see that they've got 4 points of growth in EBITDA margin and know that maybe that's because your strategy helped them to make better decisions. But that to me is not making something. Making money and making something are not the same in my mind. And I want to be able to have a material contribution to the world, ideally in a way that makes the world better, not just sells more milk and cookies, that I can see and point to and feel like I made a mark in some way.
If we change focus for the last part of this episode, Are there any structural shifts or structural challenges you see facing the consulting industry? And I guess you also have a unique perspective, having worked in advertising before and having seen lots of different industries through your MBA.
Well, I think psychologically, as human beings, there will always be a market for consulting services because, well, good leaders enjoy and ask for criticism, but they also ask for validation, and consultants provide both. And especially in the politics of businesses run by boards and C-suites, having a, quote, objective third party is massively useful in negotiations. Leaders need consultants to convince their boards of what they want to do and convince their organizations that what they want to do is going to save the business. I can't really say that there is a fundamental structural issue with consulting, because I do think that there will always be a need for that. I think the bigger potentially structural issue is not just with consulting, but it is with capitalism overall. It's with, you know, GDP as a concept and growth and kind of shareholders and quarterly statements and all of that. And I think our generation in particular and the generations that come behind us are increasingly disenchanted with that as a model for the world that kind of creates massive chasms in society and the exploitation of natural resources. And I don't think it's going anywhere in our lifetimes, but I think that consultancies that help the world to move towards a direction that is less purely capitalism motivated are going to increasingly succeed. I mean, you can even just look at the number of people who go work for Dahlberg and for consultancies that do charity work and sustainability consulting and that sort of thing. Like, people want to feel like they're helping fix the world's problems, not just helping make businesses make more money.
Yeah, I definitely think sustainability is a increasingly important factor going forward in countries and societies, but also in businesses in general. And like you rightly said, it is something that people are thinking about more and more. Is there anything else you think that is challenging the consulting industry?
I think also another massive one is that really demanding industries with fast-paced cultures and clear career tracks and progressions are incredibly difficult for women to navigate in their childbearing years. There is increasing lack of acceptance of that as the norm. Women are less likely to put having children on hold until they make partner, and are more likely to just expect firms to do better and to change the way that we think about having a family as a part of life, and expectations for that to be shared amongst the genders, expectations for the pace of career progression to not be so, to think of, you know, a career as a series of accelerations and decelerations and not just like go, 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 stop. Because especially I've witnessed that in Chicago with a lot of kind of like middle class families where maybe their moms didn't work because, you know, women have only really been in the workforce in these numbers for one generation, maybe two, but a lot of women have their first kid, come back to work, and then they have their second and they're just like, screw it, I'm done. I can't manage this. Childcare costs too much. The gender roles in a traditional white Midwestern American family are more likely that the man will be the breadwinner and the woman is going to have to pay a nanny and do all of the unpaid labor at home, plus do her day job. And it's just too much pressure. And so many women leave the workforce. And obviously that's changing and that's good. But I think more broadly, city jobs need to figure out how careers and family work, not just for women, but for men too, because our generation is not going to accept that type of life stage and progression.
I want to finish off with a question that I ask all my guests who come on the show. If you had to give your younger self a piece of advice, what would it be?
I have had the opportunity to think about this quite a bit in my time off when I did my MBA, when I kind of like made some big life choices. And I think if I could tell my teenage self anything, I would say, be bold. Do the things that matter to you when they matter and just get on with them. Don't worry about getting everyone's approval and don't worry about what's going to happen next. If you care about something, go for it and go for it wholeheartedly, because at least then if you fail, you will have tried it and you can kind of check it off the list. Don't put things off and hope that maybe someday you'll try them. I mean, who knows where I'd be now if I'd moved to France when I was 23 instead of when I was 28. I'm really glad I did it. Kind of wish I'd done it sooner. So that's what I'd say. It's just, if you know in your heart that there's something that you want, don't wait, just do it. And I saw that when I left Chicago and I moved away, there are so many people at my agency who are just like, Kate, I'm so glad that you just did that thing. I'm thinking about making big moves in my life and in my career too. And it was inspiring to see you make big moves. You just have to do it. You just have to like be bold. So that's my answer.
That was Kate on Secrets of the City. Thank you for listening in, and I'll see you next time.